Welcome to Technology Tangents. We get leaders together to discuss the important tech of today and the implications for tomorrow. Our discussions are fun, lighthearted, and frankly opinionated, but hopefully gives you a sense of what matters, what to pay attention to, and what to ignore. Today, I want to talk about the AI talent gold rush. To start that conversation, let's kick it off with the recent frenzy of AI talent wars. Have you guys seen this? This is Silicon Valley is seeing unprecedented compensation packages. We're seeing companies literally buy entire teams now from other organizations in order to secure one or two really great people. They'll take the whole team. Kevin, welcome back, by the way. Nice to see you.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Kick us off. What do you think?
What do I think about the talent war, gold rush? Yeah, it's actually a very interesting time around, and I'm excited to talk about this today because it's interesting to see the behavior. And really, my first question goes, when you start seeing the compensation packages, you start to think about, well, man, what is the return on the investment of that individual? Then you start thinking about, well, that's interesting seeing how people are jumping back and forth between companies. And so then it starts to become, maybe it's just the rich at warfare. Yeah, I think then you start to come down to it more from a serious perspective. You know, what do the firms that can't afford either the $1 million packages for an engineer or the multi-million dollars for the all-stars? And what do we expect from those individuals? You know, if you pay, and what is the expected return in terms of whether, are they buying skills? Are they buying IP? Are they trying to hurt their competitors? Are they assuming the pie Piper effect where if they join, someone else is going to, they're going to follow the whole team. And I think that's what's kind of intriguing. And then what are all the rest of us do, you know, that aren't going to be able to afford that? And how do you think about that? And so, and right now it feels like what it is, it's just a theme that we've gone back to over the years, the very classical and technical word, it's hungry, hungry hippo, in terms of it's trying to gobbling up whatever talent you possibly can. And then I think people are going to figure out what to do with it later. And I think now we're in that moment as we're seeing that. And you start thinking the average compensation for an AI data engineer, what if it being somewhere between $500 and $1 million, depending on what that looks like, we are completely buying on, there's no future earnings in that, right? They're just trying to think through where they do that. So yeah, specifically, it's really, I guess right now, it's what I think is you're just seeing how to even respond to it. Where does it come back to previous experiences? I think the buying of companies is actually the most interesting element of that. Like we're saying, hey, we're going to buy a division, or even the fact that one company is going to sell a division. Like that in itself is really intriguing of like, what does that look like and how you monetize that talent? So thoughtful.
And thoughtful, experienced. Jay, that's a high bar.
That's not usually why people... asked me to get involved is for a very thoughtful response. Yeah.
And I'm sure that have you announced to our faithful listeners that you know that you have sold your AI tech finding fish finding company, right?
No, I haven't, but I actually did see where someone wanted to do a phishing app for the Apple AI
ProVision.
Yeah, ProVision. Thanks. You know, connect that to the boat, and I was like, okay, that's getting a little bit crazy, but I'm sure someone will do it. There's already enough controversy about
that way. If you can't actually find the real fish, you can just feel like you caught a fish.
Exactly. It gets back to that. What is real?
Yeah. What is real? It's like, hey, you don't have to make up the story. You can just envision the story.
That was a whole different podcast.
It was.
There's two different aspects that I think about this. And the first is, you know, I think there's the, you know, in people and talent wars, like we've seen many of them in the past for many different technologies. You know, there's cloud, it's web 2, and we need web 3 people. Follows like a Google hype curve, right? There's an initial surge and we've got to have them and we've got to pay all these people. And then they realize like, well, these skills are pretty transferable and it's not all that different, but you know, we can train people up and we don't, a lot of people, you know, just like anything, supply and demand, when there's a huge demand, a lot of people rush over to learn it, and that increases supply, lowers the cost, and comes back down to normal. That's what happens in all of these hiring rushes, and I don't know why this one will be any different, right? And so it's not going to be, you know, $1 million salaries forever. Again, it's just a very low supply right now.
But I'm curious, and you think about this, because we have seen it before, and we've three of us have benefited from before. What do you think they're buying?
Yeah, I think they're buying the ability to learn new technology, right? Like, you know, because it is new. Like, no one is an expert in something that just came out a few months ago. What you do have is like the capability to really dig deep and learn how these things actually work underneath the hood and be able to translate that into useful business function.
Do you think that's what they're buying? Is to say they're hoping this person will help them unlock net new revenue or cost savings, or do you think it's something different? To your point of like, understand that technology works. I mean, realistically, there's probably a couple hundred people in the entire world
right,
who really know how to go build these models.
Well, that actually is my second point.
You're welcome.
So you guys, yeah, exactly, yeah, exactly. Great lead in. You know, when we think about technology and technology resources, there's always two different groups, right? There are people that build the technologies and there are people that implement and use those technologies to drive business. So we'll use the example of a relational database, right? There are people that can go build Oracle and build SQL, and those people have, that is a much smaller subset to your point, Vincent. They've got like a very small number of people that have a very specific skill and a very detailed skill around, you know, optimization and all these other really deep technology competencies, storage and memory. And then you have people that like can use a database to go, like, I can use this database to go be the back end for a website that sells a lot of things, right? And figure out how to use that technology that others create to drive business value. I use the analogy all the time of there are people that build drills and there are people that use drills to build cabinets. We often confuse the two. And so what I think you see in all of what the news tends to focus on, I think, is the big Silicon Valley, you know, people getting $1 million or hiring the whole AI team from here because it's newsworthy, right? That is an example of the teams that are, these are new technologies, and that's an example of people fighting over the drill builders, right? And there are a very small number of those. Again, building those neural networks, incredibly difficult. Being able to get hundreds of petabytes or exabytes of data and train across that, you know, analyze that and train across it, very niche skill set. But, you know, not everyone is going to go build their own database, right? And not everyone is going to go build their model. Most people will end up just using those tools and implementing them to solve their business needs. And so when I talk about, you know, this hiring, you know, hype cycle in hiring, I'm really talking about for business, mm-hmm. right? For the vast majority of people that are going to go implement these tools. I do think, you know, just like, you know, even today, if you're really good at search engines, you know, there's a high-paying job at Google or Yahoo for you. If you're really good at database, there's a high-paying job at Microsoft or Oracle. But that's never going to be a broad industry demand like it is for everyone using it.
And so in your opinion, do you think that companies are conflating the two ideas?
Absolutely.
And so they basically, a typical shop, enterprise scale, but a typical shop, not a tech, not a big three, if you will, are saying, hey, I need to go hire myself some great data scientists who really understand these large language models, AI, generative AI specifically, and they're willing to pay anything for it because they see a pot of gold at the other side. And your point is a bit, actually, you may not need those deep domain experts who can build those models because, by the way, they're probably lying to you if they say they do that. It's very few of them. And in reality, what they should do is focus on the outcomes they want and how to apply these, meaning that hype cycle, that Gartner hype cycle you're talking about, we're at the top because people are misinterpreting what they're trying to accomplish and how they're going to get there. And so they're rapidly going to hit that trough of disillusionment when they hire these people and realize, shoot, building a net new large language model from the ground up is not something I can do.
Yeah, you probably don't have the data to do it. You may be able to, you know, fine tune one with some of your data and get some extra value about that. But that's, again, that's a different skill set than being able to build the large foundational model in the first place. The other thing I think that, yes, is the short answer to your question. I think that is true, but I also think that it is true that when you are using those tools to get business value, like, well, what is it that, what skills do you need to do that? And that is, like we say all the time, a model is not a piece of software, right? And you have to have software. You know, these are like, what do you need to be able to get value out of these things? You need software engineers. You need good product people that understand how to build and grow a product and manage product teams. You need good engineers. You need good data folks that can get the data. And security, these are all like the normal roles. Now, I do think that there's a difference in terms of, like, there are new skills, but just like anytime a new technology comes out, like we, you know, a lot of people worked in Java, you know, now a lot of people work in JavaScript or Python or Ruby or other languages. But, you know, those are not big, giant shifts like, oh, I've got to learn how to build a foundational model. It's like, all right, well, I'm a good engineer. I can learn some of these, you know, new platforms, new tools, new libraries. And so I would very much encourage people to think about training, you know, some of their existing employees, because they do have a lot of domain knowledge around the actual business problems and how they've been solved. And they will be able, I think, to understand like what you may need to bring in some external people to help, like what would the models, you know, some of these ads be capable of doing, because they may not have all of that vision. But in terms of like learning to engineer and do some of these solutions, I don't think that's as big a lift. And I think that is with the great demand that companies looking to implement them will need. And again, I think people will figure that out. I think people will learn all of those, just like there's always a gold rush for Ruby developers or JavaScript developers or whatever, you know, new framework it is this week. That's where it will get settled down, I think.
First of all, we heard it here first that Ruby developer framework developers are worth the same as AI engineers. So I just want to, just for all you out there with, if we can, Vincent, and this is your thing, so you can say no, but I'm actually intrigued back to something you said a bit ago, really around where they're doing this because they think there's a pot of gold at the end of it. That may have been what you were trying to play, but it's been the way that was statement go. But to me, I actually think it's being done by fear, and it's being done. I think when you see the way that markets are valuing this going this high, it's like companies are so afraid that if I don't have this person, or I don't have this thing, or I can't say I didn't do whatever, that this is their way of saying, I actually don't have a solution to be able to do this yet, or maybe I don't have a way to monetize it. But I can point to the fact that, hey, we just dropped $10 million. We just hired this celebrity X. And at least that, they're almost like, it's almost like a BS move versus an actual, you know, hey, we think it's going to do it. And then Jason took us down, which is actually, how do we actually monetize it? How do we actually do something with it? So one of the questions I think is interesting right now, so how long is it going to be in this kind of this system where we're just like literally we're seeing people jump between company to company, or just even the fact that they're named? You know, these aren't entrepreneurs anymore. These aren't the leaders of these companies. These are actually employees that are now getting their own celebrity status because of what they're doing. And they have the same 120 hours a week that everyone else does. And so what actually can they accomplish by themselves that's going to drive back the return on that? So,
yeah, I think it's a really good point. And I think this moment is a bit surreal. It's fascinating, and it's surreal for all these points you both are raising. The other layer of complexity I'll add, and this is why I'm not entirely convinced there's no doubt in my mind there's a lot of hype and there's a lot of froth in this space right now. No doubt about it. On the other hand, I think there's a lot of opportunity as well. I mean, we're already seeing examples like Klarna, who has saved 700 people's worth of customer service support in a year. 700 people. We're talking about tens of millions of dollars already realized by leveraging this type of technology. There is so much opportunity for savings. There's so much opportunity for developing net new products that I think this space, while maybe incredibly hype and very frothy, will actually pan out to be quite good.
I'm not questioning the value. Like, I think the Klarna example is a great example of, you know, where they, what was it, 700 people they cut out of the call center or something like that. Well, what was involved in that implementation, right? It was not a bunch of Andre Carpathy designing a large language model for them, right? It was engineering that into the website and building a front end for people to answer questions, and a lot of, I won't say rote engineering tests. I mean, there it is different paradigms and different technologies and libraries to use in these solutions. I'm not suggesting there isn't that initial hype of the people that know that have a big advantage because they can go do those things. And I do think there's a ton of value for it. I just think that over time, companies that succeed will adopt those technologies, get the value you're talking about. But the pool of people that can do that is going to grow very rapidly just because of market forces.
Well, so yeah, and I think this ties back to what you were getting at, which is to say today, I think largely companies believe that a single person can deliver all of this value. This is the early days of big data. When I went to many companies and spoke with many people who said, well, we have all this data, these are our money trees, we're going to hire one PhD, whatever, chemistry, physicist, statistician, and this one data scientist is going to unlock all of, they're going to harvest our money trees. And it turned out to be wildly inaccurate. It's not that simple. It requires this multidisciplinary approach to really deliver value. This will be the same. So from that perspective, I do believe there's a bit of a hype that if I just hire this one person or this one team, then everything will be solved. It's far more complex and nuanced than that. That being said, the value, I think, is worth that investment today. And if you think about, I mean, even if you bought a whole team and you were paying each of them $1 million, if your first project returned $40 million a year in savings, it's still pretty good ROI. That's your first project. That'll only get bigger and better over time as one example. Again, one example. The thing that I think is really fascinating, though, and what makes this almost surreal is the backdrop on which all of this hyper talent war, frothiness, hype cycle, gold rush, whatever you want to call it at the moment exists. And that is the massive amount of shift in labor market from an incredibly tight economy where there were 6-7 jobs, open listings for every one unemployed person, to a world where we have huge layoffs taking place every day across every sector. Amazon just announced they laid off a few hundred people. It's closing down several divisions. Other big names would be include T-Mobile, SecureWorks, Salesforce, Virgin Media, Microsoft. You know, you can keep going on the list. Google, Sisense, everybody's just doing these huge amounts of layoffs in tech. It's not just tech, though. Wayfair recently laid off 1,600 employees, about 13% of its global staff, to save $280 million annually. Advertising and sales, Google again laid off a few hundred roles in their advertising division. So look, the layoffs are wide-ranging industries. They include technology, e-commerce, health, retail, everything under the sun effectively. And a lot of the reasons cited are around, you know, restructuring, efficiencies, cost savings. And then you juxtapose that with the current market. It's kind of fascinating. So you get to this question of like, well, is there really all this demand for talent, or are we freeing up so many new people that these new jobs will be sucked up immediately and the price will drop back down? Is there really high demand? Are we really facing talent shortages with all these layoffs?
I actually don't know if I would agree at the premise of the question.
Good, don't push back.
The premise, because really what I think what we're saying is that, how do we compare the fact that we're seeing companies lay off people while we're seeing, you know, high demand for specialized skills? And I think what I think is potentially what we're looking at is that you're starting to see just a change in what's needed for the workforce. And then whether it be, and think about our competing themes, you know, around, one is AI, clearly different way of working through that, different way of thinking how we're going to change. Some of that's still preparatory, but you can see it coming. We're seeing, you know, there was a huge glut in knowledge workers around retail and tech around COVID. Mm-hmm. And I think it's possibly that you're starting to see some of that is now unwinding. We had to throw so much human capital to be able to make those things work. And now the technology, the solutions, the automation, those elements have now caught back up to where the human capital required either to make those changes or to support those changes or support the lifestyle required of that is less. Well, maybe you're seeing some companies that are looking, saying, I'm looking at the lower potential parts of our business. You know, we need to really free up some capital to be able to deploy it to these other areas that are going to require growth and investment. Because if you start saying, if your average salary for employee is going to be 3-4x what your typical salary is, and we don't quite know when we're going to, you know, we're going to start probably by making defensive type moves to really cost efficiencies, those things, that's what we're seeing. Well, at some point those have to shift. You've squeezed all those savings and now you got to shift to offense and products and services that are driving that. And that might be further out yet where we don't quite know where that's going to be. And, but it's, I think that you also alluded to the market. It's amazing to just see, you've got all time highs, core sectors reducing headcount. We know that there's going to be less labor force just by the nature of demographics, at least in North America. And yet you're trying to make sense of this as an investor, as an employee, as an employer. Where do you start to put your services? And then there's no answers in those questions besides that it's a really kind of fascinating time to see all these forces come together. And then you throw, I know we're not supposed to talk about current events in the midst of, but you've got, 75 countries around the world that are going through elections this year. And so it's like you've got the majority of the world is got some sort of, you know, macro tension that's outside of these themes. And I think what you're seeing is a lot of confusion. You know, maybe the rational thing is to pay $1 million right now for someone because at least it's tangible and you can, can go and do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great point. Just, yes, you have massive amounts of shift in the workforce today. And that comes down to, are you going to help make this company's transition to AI products? That specialization that required, they're in high demand. The less specialized, the less AI enabled, maybe not as much demand.
Or just even, yeah, and Jason, I think we love your perspective because you were giving us, we left the fact where you're going in terms around skill development, but I think it's possible we're just seeing the next evolution of, you know, really knowledge worker advancement and what the requirements to do that are. And you know, we know we've seen there is lots of jobs that are continuing to be open, but for less and less skills. And what is that going to look like? I mean, those are societal questions that we're going to have to ask. And how do we continue to see really just disparity in between, you know, what certain, you know, skill resources and really what is required to do that? And I think another theme on that, that's interesting that I'd love to talk about at some point. I don't know if today's the right day, but it's really around just even what does it take to learn the skills? right, Jason? You were going down a path of like how you can reskill and retool. And you think that's the part that I think is interesting right now, is that it's changing so fast that there's going to be the specialists that have, Vincent, your degrees. You know, how does we do that? There's going to be a lot of folks that are going to come from a much more general skill set that are going to have to use the tools to advance their knowledge. And they're going to question, well, where do you get that from? And how much do I have to pay for that? And I think it's actually going to be really intriguing to see the value, you know, what's that value for college and other ways, and really how do we restrain everyone? Because I think it's going to be done in a lot more efficient way, and companies are going to do it much more themselves, as themes we've talked about before.
Well, back to the Gartner hype cycle, I think we just may see some overlapping ones that from an AI perspective, it's, you know, at the peak and it's very frothy, as you said, Vincent. Like some of these others are not. A good example is a lot of the metaverse and AR, VR. A lot of people have pivoted away from that, Meta being the main example right there. But why is that? Well, it could be that it was, you know, a lot of over-exuberance in COVID. I think that's definitely part of it. I think it's also something else you mentioned I hadn't thought about, but I agree with, Kevin, is the pivot. It's like, well, if AI is going to drive all this value, like let's stop investing in this thing earns us a dollar and this thing earns us two, and investing a dollar in this thing earns us four. Let's stop doing that. And I think you may be seeing some of that. And I think also in COVID, there was a lot of hiring that ahead of demand, you know, thinking that some of the demands that drove are going to continue forever. They're not, right? I think it is not any one thing. I think it may be all of those things and maybe others, right, driving that. You know, there definitely is this overlap in those hype cycles where some of these more traditional things are dropping off at the same time that the AI investment's ramping up. What I would encourage those people to do is learn the AI technologies, yeah. Right?
Well, I think that's a great point. And, you know, we've talked about this before. You know, even things like sales and managerial roles, we see a massive difference in the labor market today where salespeople proficient with AI technologies are commanding almost double the salary of those who are not. It's clearly measurable to ROI. That's the beauty of salespeople in general and why they make so much money relative to others, is because you can directly tie it back to actual revenue creation. Those who are great at AI are better at identifying new leads, to reaching out, to responding, getting the right information very quickly, and therefore they can just generate more revenue for the company. And so I think you're exactly right. It's really that skill differentiation moving forward.
One thing that's exciting for me, I mean, I like the value of work, the dignity of work. And so again, that's a whole other themes there. But one thing that's interesting to me is around the metaverse or even early AI, even going back to some of the original OpenAI stuff, is that it was being sold primarily, the benefit was leisure. And I think what we're seeing now, that we're not talking about leisure as much. We're talking about productivity, games, how we can do it, how do we grow. And like for me, that's personally a lot more interesting and a lot more exciting. It still might lead to leisure. It still might lead to work, more efficient work, less work required. I mean, those are all societal gains. But like I think it's less exciting to think about doing something solely so we can have, you know, people, you know, not have to go create, because I think there's value in the creation and how we think through that. So a lot of different themes that can be unpacked in that particular thing, but I think we're starting to see it flip towards, I mean, in complicated elements, right? Why do we motivate? What do we do? But I think we have found, you know, innovation occurs often when there's a benefit that can be realized. And I think you're seeing that more now today, which is why then you're starting to see that the people are willing to pay more into it, the scarcity effects coming into play. And then now where does that go in terms of how do companies respond? How do the you know, private equity, how do those elements, you know, that's going to be really fascinating to see this next kind of rush that's going to occur coming at right after the individual, after all the individuals are bought up, then what do we do about it?
That leads me to the next question for you in particular, Kevin, which is if you think about the space today, so far we've talked about large enterprises and what they're going to do. What about VC-funded startups and entrepreneurship? What are your thoughts on that?
This gets me excited to think about this. Just from the opportunities that are going to be available to people. So you ask these questions around, you're thinking about, well, if I can command $1 million salary to work for a company, obviously I'm thinking about the return on that I'm going to get as an individual. It's really probably many ways that the company provides the tools that they need versus me just going to my garage and recreating it myself. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because we still have to have access to the data and the really the hardware associated with being able to make these things work that individuals are going to do. But I think you'll see a lot of more individuals start thing. I think you're going to see, it's going to be interesting around where the innovation occurs and how do, you know, the large companies, you think the big three, big four, how did that play out? You know, you think about the different industries we can use as comparables. You know, you get pharma, right? Well, how much, you know, really how much drug development happens now within the large pharma versus they're very proficient at buying companies at certain stages of development and maturing that. I think you might see that more, even more in technology in this space, is that there's going to be room for people. You may not see someone, I mean, OpenAI is going to come out and be able to have a head start based on what they did and be able to work through that. But even them, obviously much more wiser people than me can decide if OpenAI is really just its own independent concern versus really being controlled by one of the big three. But how will other firms do it? And then when do they get bought? And I think you're going to see a lot of early gobbling up of companies and it's going to almost be, whether it be private equity firms doing roll-ups or the big technology, we're just going to continue to buy stuff. We're going to parse out pieces that we like. We'll start put things together. So as an individual, it could be back that you're going to be able to start something. You're going to be able to have a huge valuation based on an idea versus actually having real customers, real revenue, which for entrepreneurs, that should be actually pretty exciting. And then that dust will settle and we'll go back to, hey, now you actually have to have a product or a service that can actually make some money. But for the next few years, I think it's going to be a lot of buying on the hype.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, Sam Altman came out and said among his CEO tech startup friends, there's effectively a little betting pool about when will the first billion-dollar single-person company come into existence, something that would be impossible without generative AI, they all believe is now possible. And the question is just when, not if, but when.
See, I actually think it will be less speculative in terms of betting on ideas, because I do think the generative AI will allow people to actually build things and have actual product. Now, they may not have the customer base, but they'll have working product much faster, much easier, much cheaper. And I think the impact of that will be that you get a lot more startups, right? Because you don't need as many people. You can have a lot more of them. And I think that's generally a good thing. A lot more dice throws, you get a lot more sevens. Right, better ideas, and you knew I was going
to... Seven is good, by the way.
Yeah.
Jason wouldn't know that based on his recent trips.
But yeah, I know. Yeah, you have a lot more people that can generate a lot more companies with a lot less capital. You have a lot more ideas. Some of them turn out to be really good, and so those get bought, when they actually have real products. So I think it will be a big boom for startups, but I think they'll actually have a lot less, vaporware and a lot more actual, software, and there'll be a lot more of them to choose from. Yeah. But I also agree that people will start buying them up.
Well, it's 100%. Interesting concept there, with the way that the speed of creation, well, obviously the tools are going to kind of do that. So, and we've seen that the speed of evolution has occurred in really every major technology wave. So I think it's just assumed that will continue to happen. And so it's almost probably in some ways hard to imagine what productivity will look like and what we'll do it with. And which is kind of interesting around, potentially say once you get past the efficiency gains, which again, if we go back and look at probably each of the major technology advancements, they all started with the efficiency gain too, right? How you shared information, how you passed information, the web, mobile. And then there's going to be individuals that are going to really be thinking about what are the new industries and new services and skills that will come out of this, which is really where the barriers of entry. You have the barriers from the data and the model, but the barriers of entry creating something with Jason, which I think is going to go down significantly. And I think what's interesting also, and is possible that people that are motivated to go take that risk, they're going to find an environment to where their own willingness to take risk is going to put them in a subset of folks that's probably different than what some of their competitive set, particularly in our younger generation.
Yeah, and I actually am also interested to see what the impact on the VCs themselves are. A really smart computer science student can now go grab a lot of the tools and for very cheaply create something in literally in their garage. They don't need to go ask for $50 million worth of startup capital. Therefore, they don't need to give away a significant piece of ownership in their own company. And so I back to the, one man, billion-dollar company, I think you may see some. And I think that people that may actually lose out on that are it's the VC.
Yeah, the whole capital allocation process will have to adopt and change. There's no doubt about that. Jason, you've been through more than one of these sort of paradigm shifts, these transformations. It seems to me that the AI boom is unique for a couple of reasons, but there are parallels with the previous tech revolutions, the internet boom of the 90s, early 2000s, and where both periods saw a huge demand in specialized skills that you were just talking about, right? Web development, e-commerce, and sort of machine learning AI now. However, it seems to me, again, from as an outsider, someone who didn't live through some of those personally, the AI boom seems to be faster. And it's sort of fueled by advancements in computational power and the data availability that has really never existed before. And then lastly, when you think about the diffuse impact. It's across the entire organization, not one small subset, not just marketing with e-commerce sales, but really every part of the organization. It does feel unique. How do you see this sort of current wave relative to the other transformations you've sort of lived through and been part of?
Well, again, I think there's two different things we're talking about. Like, one is using tools, right? And that others provide. You know, you use the salesperson example, right? Well, they're able to use GPT to gather data, build presentations, you know, use Office Copilot to build spreadsheets and presentations and able to sell a lot more things a lot quickly. Yeah, that definitely will happen. Those are skills around using tools that are provided by the software providers, the big software providers. I think that will be, you know, that will certainly continue, and the people that use those will drive. So that's the productivity side on the non-technology. In the technology, I don't know. You still have to learn, you know, the different tools and libraries to use them. Now, I do think you're right. The AIs themselves help speed that up. And so maybe it's a 50%, you know, improvement in learning the new things. There are certain problems that are always the same. You know, you have to, like, we built, you know, an AI chatbot. Well, we still have to deal with login, right? You know, and we still have to go integrate with our legacy login system. And now that's stuff that, you know, never goes away, but maybe we can do it a little faster. And so I do think it'll be faster in terms of implementing things for companies. It'll be faster in terms of getting product from other companies. But I think those are two different things. But both, I think for sure, will make it go faster than, you know, how long did it take people to get off the mainframes? Like, I don't know. We're still counting, right? You know, like
every single podcast we talk about mainframe brought to you by 1955
Jason just wants
technology.
Everybody to know they can hire him to help with the mainframe.
I see these like articles around, like, you know, people paying $1,000 an hour for mainframe programmers. I'm like, I'll do it.
I'm intrigued. I'm gonna say something that is probably not accurate, maybe a little controversial in the sense of this. If we think about, I'm curious around, as we're watching now, the really digital natives that are now in the first decade of their careers, you know, in many ways, the digital for them, it was around commerce, it was around retail, it was around media sharing, right? That it's fun to start thinking about what's going to be. So what's for our kids, my kids, you know, Vincent, your kids, you know, 8, 10-year-olds that are going to grow up as ChatGPT AI driven natives. What are they going to do? What is that going to look like? How is that going to play out? You know, especially if the productivity side of it versus, again, going back to maybe the leisure side of it, is interesting around what will they be growing up and what are they going to be doing over the next 10 years? And I don't have an answer for that question, but I'm intrigued by what that's going to look like. And I'm hopeful that maybe that's going to spurn all kinds of new innovation and development and things we can only imagine that have, you know, really this next huge leaps for us as companies and what that looks like.
I hope so too. The flip side of that could be the, do you really learn the fundamentals? I mean, try to ride in the car with Vincent without Google Maps. I mean, he's going to get lost.
He'll get lost getting out of the parking lot. I have to get a new car for reasons that we don't talk about right now. But I took a test drive of a car and I absolutely got lost. The guy's like, turn here. I'm like, wait, where? And then I missed the turn. He's like, yeah, it's no good. It's no good. It's just awful. It's so embarrassing. Even when somebody's there,
We were driving somewhere and he goes, how do you know where you're going without a map on? I'm like, because I live here, man. I lived here for 20 years.
Well, with what we pay Vincent or what Vincent gets paid, he has his own drivers.
You would think. Yeah. I need to get on one of these, you know, multi-million-dollar pay packages. I got to talk to Justin about that.
But the point is, I think there's opportunity to like really accelerate, you know, innovation that, but you know, it's just like, learning, you know, calculator is always my example here, right? You know, well, okay, you can make it much faster to do a lot of addition, you know, mathematics. You still need to understand what it is that you're doing and like when to add the numbers and when to subtract them. That is my concern, is that we don't lose that, right? And we use the tools and get the advancement, but don't lose the fundamental understanding. I don't know how that's going to happen. But I do think, as you know, even we're talking about, you know, developers learning, right? I think there's going to be a lot of people without traditional software engineering background learning a lot of these tools with the Copilot and are going to be very proficient at them and be able to do certain things. But it may actually result in two different classes of developers, right? You have that now anyway, but I think maybe the way to think of that is they both elevate.
even it's representative with the three of us in this call in terms of different skill sets. And you think about how we've been very focusing on the technical skill set, but it really is going to be more the business skill set or the leadership skill set and how that's going to play out and how all these tools help those individuals or the ability to lead individuals. I think it's always the interesting human element of what we're talking about and how that's going to see those advancements. And I think that there's going to be, deservedly so, not worth as much as the technology mind. And maybe actually we see the technology-driven comp be more appropriate, but it's going to be really interesting to see the rise of the knowledge leader and worker that's going to be able to harness individuals, these technologies into products, services, companies. So it's going to be fun to see how that plays out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, this cognitive revolution, if you will. So we had the previous industrial revolution, and now we're going to call this one the cognitive revolution, it would seem, is remarkable. And I think that the AI native is a really interesting question. I live it, but it's same as you, I'm sure. My daughter is an example. She's six. She literally expects me to be able to generate whatever coloring page she can dream up. Because I actually can, not because I can draw, and I'm not an artist. I can't. I'm embarrassingly bad at that as well as driving, apparently. No, but seriously, she'll just say, hey, I want a princess unicorn. I want there to be this kind of rainbow thing in the background. I want this kind of sky and this kind of bridge and this kind of castle. And we just type it into ChatGPT, and Dolly generates us a nice little image that's ready to go for coloring. And the idea that she would be limited to what's in a coloring book when we were on the plane the other day was confusing and frustrating to her. She's like, I don't want this page. I want one like this. And I'm like, well, I can't do that right now. And she's like, no, well, just use your phone. Do ChatGPT. Do the thing. And it's that expectation that, you know, they've come to be aware it's now possible that it'll be really fascinating as we play that out. Speaking of which, you know, if we think about the societal and economic impacts, Kevin, anything in there that's worth noting as we sort of do this, go through this cognitive revolution that we should be aware of? Just the idea that, you know, yeah. AI's ability to automate these cognitive tasks that are historically uniquely human, whether it be creativity or problem solving or logic, it's really unparalleled and the potential transformation is significant. I don't think we've seen anything like that before. I could be wrong, but it doesn't seem like it. It seems like the first time we're getting to really core what makes a human. Maybe it's the same as we feel about chess, you know, in the 50s, when if a computer could beat a grandmaster, that's uniquely human. And we'll say the same thing about this moment, but at least now living in it feels different.
It's an interesting thing to think about. Like, what would this be a comparable to? You know, maybe it's coming, you know, pre-World War II, or, you know, really the people as we started seeing the tradition, you know, really the significant migration from farm and agrarian society into more of an industrial. But like, yeah, even your question, which is a really one that's going to require me to think about a little bit more, you know, my mind actually goes back to different current events, to be honest. It starts back to who's getting laid off. You know, it's the fast food wage going in California this week. It's the people that are being impacted by that. You know, it's the society. We're asking this question around quality and different career paths and opportunities and how that works through it. And, you know, there's been such an important discussion around that over the last few years. And now we're instituting a technology revolution that I think everyone will rise on this. The risk is that it's going to really benefit a certain subsect of society. If we're honest, would have been successful probably without it. And so, you know, so I think that's going to be a bigger question that we're going to have to wrestle with and what to do with it. And in my particular view, not want to stop progress, but also acknowledge that it is interesting around we're seeing continuation of just separation and what that does. And there's going to be, you know, how do we continue to encourage people to strive to grow? How do we continue to work through and think through the fact that there is jobs that have different skill sets and different, you know, capabilities required that are necessary? We're not going to be able to automate everything. Because I am an optimist on this, is that we'll see that these different trending and tools will really create opportunity for everyone to continue to have evolution to achieve whatever those dreams are for them. And but it's going to cause some breaking of eggs. I mean, I think again that's to me when I see the layoffs right now, that's what it feels like. It's we're seeing skills that aren't needed anymore with people that potentially can't change, don't have enough time to change. And really, you know, it's possible that the replacement jobs isn't going to be so much, well, I can go and retrain myself in AI or data, whatever. It's going to be, oh, my fallback jobs are no longer around anymore. So how far do you have to fall? And then again, I'm giving negative views now, but I think that those are all the things that we're going to have to be looking out towards society.
I do think it's a compelling perspective and it's certainly high stakes. So the question that I love asking you both, of course, always is, you know, with such high stakes, what should companies be doing to sort of navigate this complex topology of a landscape?
Not surprisingly, it's probably going to be the similar themes that we've discussed. And it's, you know, it's going to be interesting around like, do of really why do you exist? What do you grow? What is your competitive advantage? Where do you think that you want to continue to invest? How do you balance future investment and growth and whatever that is for you versus how do you continue to work through? How do you efficiently run today? I think it's probably even going to require you more to be contemplative around what is those unique elements that make your particular company unique. Even if it's simply a geographic play, we just happen to be unique because we're here and whatever we offer in good and services is necessary. Yeah, I think it's an interesting question of like, think about the last 4.5 years and how much change is required. And I actually think this is a much more significant one because this is going to radically change how companies operate. It's not just simply how we interact with our customer. And I think we knew what we were trying to solve for in 2021, 22. I don't think we quite know that today. And so I think it's going to require more time in thinking about that. But you can't be passive. You're going to have to make decisions and move. So then when it comes back to your existing workforce, I think it's some of the things, Jason, you said a bit ago. You have to retrain. We need to encourage. We're going to have to help bring people there. I think we're going to have to work with people with grace in terms of those that are going to be wanting to learn and change and evolve and work through this and those that don't. I mean, you're seeing it a little bit in the cultural war now about return to office, right? I mean that's it. Who would have thought how much this would have been disrupting really kind of operations and many companies today as we're trying to wrestle with what to do. And you're like, how the heck could this be the top of the option thing that we're going through? And I'm not...
I mean, you've called it in fairness. Yeah. So we can see a previous pod where you said this will be a strategic differentiator. Yeah. You were right.
And so I think that that's going to be, I would just encourage to know what you're trying to do as companies and then stay focused and making sure you're allocating appropriate leadership time or people a part of your leadership team to be thinking about this and pushing it down. That'd be my, I'd go.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, you go back in history, there's other shifts, right? The invention of the automobile, like, okay, well, we don't need people to maintain and stables and horses. Like now we need people to build and fix automobiles. There's a shift there and there's a whole ecosystem around that has to shift. Ecosystems around each that have to shift, I guess I should say. And that's companies have to figure that out. And the ones that I think figure out how to take the people, retrain them and that have the knowledge of the business and what has worked in the past, but what needs to change in the future, I think will do really well.
I think it's really good. And the thing I'd add here, I think that's exactly right. Retrain your people, be flexible, continue to sort of push that envelope. I think that you probably do need to hire a couple of people who understand how these models work, not at a deep level, unless you're going to go build them your Amazon, in which case you're not listing and you don't care, you already know what to do. For most companies though, one or two people who really understand how to get business value out of these models. Yeah. And frankly, you just overpay for them. It'll end up being worth it. And you can solve that longer term by firing them and keeping the team they've built or just realizing the value and continuing to grow and develop. But it's worth it right now to really get that leg up and truly capture this brief moment in time where you can arbitrage the market. If you can deliver your goods faster and cheaper than your competitor, that's pure profit. And you need to capitalize on that. And more importantly, you need to evolve your business model. And that's the real risk here. Is that I think you'll be left by the wayside. As many retailers who didn't move to the web were left by the retailer in the e-com revolution. We're here. And then the last bit I'd say is encouraging, to everybody in the workforce today, this is a really amazing opportunity. It's incredibly exciting if you lean in. This is one of those really once in a lifetime revolutions that you'll tell your grandchildren about. Like I helped develop this, or I changed the way we did this, leveraging Gen AI. And so I'm just really excited about it, frankly. I'm excited to see what things we can do. To your point, Kevin, we have a moment in time where the first order effects of this are starting to be understood, but the second and third order, by and large, have not been even contemplated. And if you really want to spend your time doing something, think about that. Think about what it means. Think about the fact that Copilot, GitHub Copilot, reduced the number of people going to Stack Overflow because it's just not needed anymore. That second order effect, well, what does that mean for that business model? What should you be doing as a result to evolve and change? Those are the problems that I think will lead to that first, $1 billion single person company. And I think it's just really exciting that, a person who otherwise may not be as educated in computer science or in statistics or in whatever else has truly the opportunity, has been democratized the opportunity to really do really quite revolutionary things. So I think that's exciting. It's going to be really fun, and I'm excited to see what happens with not only our people, but our clients and the world at large. With that, for those who would like to learn more, please visit the insights page at Codera.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us again. Thank you, guys.